Just telling you,
but we have no chance.
Yeah, right. Stephen A. Said a rookie quarterback.
Yeah, there's no way.
That's what C.J. Stroud and the Texans had, according to Stephen A. Smith and a lot of other folks. I was not one of those people that said that they had no chance, but I was one of those people who said that I'm going to go with the veteran quarterback and the better defense. Yeah, that backfired. Look, I know the Eagles losing or imploding and the Cowboys getting worked are probably the headlines for the weekend or coming out the weekend, but C.J. Stroud really needs to be the headline coming out the weekend. That guy is absolutely amazing. Not only is he amazing, but the staff is amazing. Everything about the Texans right now is amazing. At this point, it doesn't matter what they do. They have had the single most successful year of a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach debut I've ever seen. Actually, I wondered what the historical ramifications of this season is. I'm going to have to double check that or go back and look just for my own amusement. Has there ever been a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach, or in general, a rookie coaching staff that has been this successful on their first year? And they're not just winning because teams are letting them win. They are out-coaching, out-scheming people. They are literally beating people through every level of football. You know, they got to get more credit. They have to get more credit. And I know we like the storylines. We like to bash the Eagles, and I'm getting to that later. We like to make fun of the Cowboys when they lose because it's always a good time when the Cowboys lose. But in this league, in the NFL, we rarely see success to this magnitude starting out for coach and player. Like, that combination is just crazy. I would have never in my wildest dreams thought that D'Amico Ryan would have been as good of a coach as he's been this year. I'd have never thought Bobby Slowick would have been a great offensive coordinator. But you know what? It looks like everything Kyle Shanahan touches besides the Niners is just they're winners. They're absolute winners. And my Niner fans know what I mean by that. We won a Super Bowl. We don't really care about the regular season and the playoffs anymore, man. Get us a ring, Kyle. And I'll get to that later, too. But just if you go back to that game, I want everybody to go back to this one play. Because this one play stood out to me on TV, and I think I saw somebody in one of my chats post something that somebody had mentioned that one play on Twitter as well. But just the idea of how and why the Texans are so successful, they're playing chess while everybody else is playing checkers, and it's amazing to see from such a young staff. I think it's like the last touchdown that they scored, or either way, it's the Dalton Schultz touchdown. I just want you to take your time to look at that play and notice the subtle nuance in the concept and the execution by the team and just the totality of the situation to even call that play and to execute it like they did. It just shows a different level of confidence from the staff and a different level of trust in a rookie quarterback. You got the play action with the flood concept. Everybody sees it. And you know, in the NFL and in general, this happens a lot in sports. We're creatures of habits. We don't really see people change up too much of what they do. Like, if you see a mesh concept, it's going to be the same no matter what, basically. We're just used to seeing everybody do the same thing because it's a copycat league. So the flood concept that they ran had everybody running basically to the short side of the field. I think they were lined up near the right hash, so everybody's running to the right side. The deepest guy, I think, in that formation as far as the route was supposed to be Dalton Schultz. So he's running to the back pylon on the right side. That's the way it's supposed to work. You got, I think, at least two people underneath. There's one guy that's short, one guy that's intermediate, then you got Dalton Schultz going deep. And you got the play action. When Stroud rolls to the right, everybody flows to the right because they're like, okay, here it comes. Play action to run. Everybody's playing their position. But what Dalton Schultz does is instead of running to that pylon, he essentially runs something similar to a corner post. And he goes back to the space to the left side, which goes against the logic of a flood concept. But it's a subtle nuance, and there's nobody there. Lo and behold, nobody there. It's plenty of space. And all CJ Stroud did was throw it to the open space. It doesn't get any easier than that. And I know somebody listens to that is like, people do that all the time. They really don't. And then they don't execute it in that fashion either. They drop bombs on the Browns, man. Drop bombs on the Browns. And in the beginning, the Browns were actually game. It was 14-14 or 14-7. They were going back and forth, it looked like. But it's just one of those things where essentially, you know, we use a lot of boxing references in football. But this was like a slugfest. This was Hagler Hearns, and the Texans were Hagler. If anybody needs a reference on that or they've never seen that, just Google it, man. It's one of the most glorious and popular fights in boxing history. But a pure slugfest. The Browns thought they were game. They were not. And again, I want to jump on the Eagles and Cowboys, and I'm about to in a few. But I think we would be doing a disservice to the Texans if we did not acknowledge that they're playing so well and that they're doing it at a level that arguably is elite. I'm sorry, elite. They're executing at an elite level. And that makes them dangerous. That makes them dangerous. I'm looking forward to seeing them playing the Ravens. I wish I could go so I could see that in person, but my media credential got denied. And I ain't paying that money to go up there. So shoot, now I want to watch it from press row. But yeah, the storylines from the weekend, and you know, I'm not going to recap the games for you because I do this on the Tuesday. By this time, I think all the games have been recapped. I can recap the Monday night games, but there's no need to talk about Saturday and Sunday at this point in a recapping fashion. So let's just get to it. Mike McCarthy needs to be fired. I hate to say it, and I thought, you know, after seeing them play in Washington and just in general, thinking to myself, was there a scenario where I would want to move on from Mike McCarthy? I was like, look at what he's done to Dak Prescott in this offense. Nah, I mean, he's earned this. He's earned another year at least. No. There's absolutely no excuse for losing that game in the fashion that they lost. The Cowboys got whipped. They got whipped with every single advantage that you could possibly give this team. Like, it doesn't get any easier. Essentially, what I'm equating this to is they had an open book test and they still failed. They lost to a team that wasn't even supposed to be in the playoffs. We had to create a seventh spot to get these dudes in the playoffs. They don't belong here. And you're the number two seed. And you're at home. And you have one of the best home records in the league. You got a top 10 defense. You got a top 10 offense. You got a veteran quarterback. You got a former Super Bowl winning coach and a defensive coordinator who's been to the Super Bowl. You have every advantage except Matt LaFleur is probably a better coach than Mike McCarthy could ever be. That's the only thing. And Jordan Love is just Aaron Rodgers reincarnated. I don't know how they keep getting these quarterbacks like this. But I don't understand what happened. To me, it's just an epic failure across the board. If I'm Jerry, I need a guy, man, that's just going to not lose the games for me. You know, it's rare that we say that about a coach. I think at one point in Andy Reid's career early on when he just – well, I mean, he's still not a great game manager. But when it came to the game managing decisions, you're like, just – hopefully the team's good enough to not put him in that situation. We don't have to worry about it. That's where the Cowboys are now. They need a team good enough that they don't have to worry about their coach actually needing to coach. Because that was piss poor, as my old coach used to say. I don't understand the game plan. You're playing against a defense. They're not a top 10 defense. They're not a top 15 defense, I don't think. They're below average a little in a lot of areas, especially in the passing game, on first downs. Like, it's one of those, like, advanced stats, and I'm using air quotes, it's like an advanced stat, but they're one of the worst first down defenses against the pass. I don't even know why that's a thing that people record, but it is, and it's something that probably stands out on film, and yet the Cowboys come out and they just try to establish the run. You try to do something that you haven't really done all year. Tony Pollard is not Zeke. He's not a good running back. You should have been known that. Why is he featuring so much in the beginning? You should have came out and established some kind of rhythm with CeeDee and Dak like you had been doing in every other game, because they're rhythm guys. It's almost like Mike McCarthy didn't know his team. Like, he just forgot who he was coaching. Why would you come out and do anything different than what you've done all year? It's terrible. It's an epic failure. The type of failure I can't forgive if I'm Jerry Jones. I just can't. I can't overlook that you got all the pieces to win. Even if you don't win a Super Bowl, I would be okay with losing that game and saying that the Packers were the better team. Like, if the Packers came in with a better roster and just beat the Cowboys, I'd be okay with that. But the difference in talent and the difference in just the overall roster between the two teams is unforgivable. Absolutely unforgivable. And don't even get me started on, again, the stupid stuff that Mike McCarthy does from a game managing point. You're down 16, or is it 24, something like that. I don't think they ever got it within 16, actually. But essentially, you're down three scores. You're down three scores. You have the option to go for two, and I think it was 24. Yeah, you go for two because you need 3 2-point conversions. Like, you don't want to extend the game in any kind of way. There was an offensive penalty, I believe, and it backed him up, and so he opted to kick. Stupid stuff like that is why I don't like Mike McCarthy, because it changes nothing. Changes nothing. Even with your back against the wall, your season and coaching job on the line, you still can't take a risk. You still can't nut up and just do what needs to be done to try to win. You're still being that passive guy. Get out of here, man. Get out of here. And to Cowboy fans, I would say, you know, it couldn't have happened to a better team, but I haven't gotten to the Eagles yet. So, and as Cowboy fans know, I'm off of y'all as far as, like, coming after you. This is what happens, and it sucks. And even the fans tried to tell me before the game, like, if there's a way to lose, we'll find out. We'll find that way. Well, I guess you were right. And I'm happy to be wrong about that game, but that's unforgivable. Unforgivable to me. But rolling into the Eagles, because we might as well just jump on the whole NFC East, which is great, because last year I bashed the NFC East and they had a decent year and everybody was like, oh, look at you. You know what you're talking about. And the Eagles are in the Super Bowl. Look at you guys again. We're back to where we started. You suck. The Eagles. The Eagles, the Eagles, the Eagles. Man. I'm going to have a hard time not cursing later on when I'm on air talking about this team. Because if there's one thing I can't stand as a fan, as a former athlete, as a person who coached little kids at some point, and just in general, I hate lack of effort. I hate it with all my heart. I can't stand it. And when I see it on a field of play, in a competition, in an athletic competition, and you're not hustling, I can't do it, bro. I can't do it. It's the only thing that makes my eye twitch. And it's probably the most old school thing about me, but it matters, bro. It matters. People get hurt in football when you don't play hard. Not only you could possibly get hurt, but your teammates could possibly get hurt. And if anything, if you're that selfish, and this is borderline George Pickens rant too, but if you're that selfish, I don't want you on the field. Why are you here? Why are you here? I would have more respect for the Philadelphia Eagles if they'd have just told Sirianni, we don't want to play, man. Why do we only want to go to the playoffs? Put the people out there that'll try, that'll hustle. That was disgusting. That was disgusting. And whatever Philly sports media and ESPN and all these other talking heads say about the Eagles, if it's negative, I'm all for it, because that was trash. That was trash. The defense, loafing pretty much the entire time. The one guy that wasn't loafing was the one that was standing out getting all the highlights up front. Loafing. My boy Jalen Carter, semi-loafing. And I love Jalen Carter, but I get it, man. You playing as hard as you can, and Slay and Trashberry, Dingleberry. that's such a big out thing to say, but I might run with that. Dingleberry is out there not doing anything to cover anybody. And then when they catch the ball, they don't really tackle. Bro, I need to see 7 to 8 people flying around the ball. Good defenses do that. The Eagles in 2022 and 2023 would have never, ever let somebody catch the ball and have that much space. People pursued. People tried to hit. They wrapped up. They gang tackled. They hustled. They played with energy. This team does not do that. And I don't know. I don't know why the collapse happened. I keep saying they're head cases, but I don't even think they're head cases anymore. At this point, I have no real explanation from the outside looking in. But it's got to be something with the coach, the staff. Like, it's got to be something internal, obviously. And my man Jason Kelce just looks so tired, bro. I feel bad for that man. Just let him retire. Just let him go. Like, he looked worn out, just drained. Not physically, but just in general drained. So I expect him to retire this year. And I know he had wanted to a couple years ago. Like, I think maybe the Super Bowl season right before that or something like that. I expect him to retire. And he's had a great career, one of the best centers to ever do it. And, you know, in a world where we don't give our centers, unless they're Jeff Saturday, we don't give our centers enough credit. I think Kelce has definitely transcended to that level of he might be the best center ever, or in the talk of one of the best centers ever. And that's perfectly fine to me because the dude could do it all. But I've got my top three reasons why Sirianni should be fired. Because Jay Glazer says it's not on the table. Man, we don't know about this owner, bro. He crazy. he got a quick trigger sometimes. But the conversation should at least be had. My number one reason would be because he couldn't motivate the team down the stretch. It seemed like they tuned him out. Like, they won't listen to nobody on the staff, honestly. And I highly doubt he was talking about rainbows and flowers and whatever it was that he said to motivate them back in 2021 or what, his first season. But, like, nobody was listening. Nobody was listening. And you couldn't even get your vets to rally the troops. Like, that's concerning to me. Like, I didn't see any change. Matter of fact, I saw them get progressively worse throughout this run. At some point, I should have seen some kind of fight. Nothing. So that would be my number one reason why I think he should get fired. The second one, Jalen Hurts regression. I mean, I hate to say it, but, you know, he's a coach that's tied at the hip to his quarterback. And the franchise is tied to Jalen Hurts because of the contract. And I know people be like, you shouldn't pay them. You got to pay your quarterbacks. You got to. I don't know what to tell you. If he has one good season, you know, and he shows you that he can lead an offense to a Super Bowl, because that's what he did. He led the offense to a Super Bowl. He gives you a chance to win a Super Bowl. You got to pay him. That includes Dak. That includes Kirk Cousins. That includes every quarterback that we often complain about is overpaid. If they give you a chance to win, you got to pay them, because you don't want to get stuck with a Mason Rudolph as your starting quarterback. You don't want to have to get stuck with drafting Kenny Pickett or messing around and having Davis Mills play and depending on somebody like Joe Flacco to come back from the dead. You don't want to do that, man. So I get that people think that Hurts is overpaid, but he's clearly shown you that he has the talent to get it done. But he needs to be coached. He needs to be guided. And that regression, I think, falls solely on Sirianni, because you promoted the offense of the quarterback coach to offensive coordinator. And there's nothing wrong with Steichen leaving to go to the Colts. Like, that's inevitable. Like, a good offensive coordinator is going to end up getting a head coaching position. A good coordinator in general is going to get a head coaching position. So the idea is that the head coach who is losing said coordinator will find somebody to replace him. It's really not that complicated. You're in charge of the personnel and the staff, and both are failing right now. So it has to fall on him. And then I said three reasons. Johnson kind of go hand in hand. I am struggling this one. Johnson kind of goes hand in hand with the second reason. But the offensive coordinator, it hasn't looked good. I had said something about it in week 3. Week 3, watching from my couch, I was like, man, this offense don't look nothing like last year. And it wasn't anything about the way they lined up. It was just their execution, their approach to attacking, like, it just didn't look good. They looked out of sync. And Johnson's got the pedigree to be successful. He was with the Florida Gators from 2018, 2020. They were top 10 offense the entire time. And then he moved up to quarterback coach for the Eagles. And he's worked with Jalen Hurts since he's been in the league. Like, he was the quarterback coach in 2022 when they had their good offensive year. So does it make any sense to me that he would get promoted to offense coordinator and then the team regresses to the point where they regressed? And he took a lot of the RPO out of the offense from what I've seen. And I think that's silly. Honestly, at the end of the day, Johnson doesn't look like he's a good play caller. He can be a great offensive mind. He can be a great offensive coach. But calling plays is an art. It's an art. Not everybody can do it. Not everybody can do it. And as a coach, Sirianni, you need to recognize that. You recognize that your defensive coordinator was trash, and then you hired or promoted an even worse defensive coordinator. And I got a sidetrack here. Can we please start holding Belichick accountable for these sorry-ass people that he's called his staff? Patricia sucks. He sucks. He hasn't had any success outside of New England ever. All the people who were on that New England staff during their title runs, the majority of their title runs, suck. Which, again, leads me to think that they were probably cheaters because these dudes can't find success anywhere else. And Tom Brady don't play defense, so I can't even be like, well, he had Tom Brady. Like, he never even had a really talented defense. They were well coached. And that was Bill, probably. It was definitely Bill. But Patricia sucks, man. Patricia sucks. Daniel sucks. Or Josh McDaniels. They all suck. Just again, I know I got sidetracked there, but we really need to hold them accountable. But the Patricia thing was an awful move. Johnson clearly isn't a good play caller. You couldn't make any adjustments throughout the season. The staff didn't look like they could reach the players. You couldn't reach the players. It's an epic failure. So, Philly, how open do you think your window is? How open do you think your window is? Because the NFC isn't like the AFC. If this was in the AFC, I truly would fire him, because you got to think at some point the Jags are going to turn it around. The Colts are going to get a healthy quarterback, and they were already competitive this year. You see C.J. Stroud and the Texans. You know the Bills ain't going nowhere. You expect the Dolphins to get it together at some point. The Chiefs ain't going nowhere. Did I miss anybody? Oh, yeah, the Jets might get healthy. So that's a little bit – I would say that's more urgent. I didn't even touch on the whole AFC North because they're all competitive. So, yeah, that probably would be a little bit more urgent. In the NFC – like, the Seahawks are probably going to be trending down. The Cardinals ain't going to get no better no time soon. The Vikings don't know what they're going to do. It's really just the Lions, the Niners, and then whoever else in the NFC East is going to trip over their own feet. And we don't even count the NFC South. We need to relegate them to FCS. So, yeah, it's probably not as urgent because, you know, judged by your peers in that conference, you're still a top five team. You're still going to make the playoffs. But, you know, I felt like it was Super Bowl aspirations this year. And it's one thing to get in the playoffs and, again, just get beat because the other team's better. But you just beat the Bucks in the regular season. You've already played this team and beat them in Tampa. They didn't really get that much better. And you got roasted, torched, essentially, by Baker Mayfield. Statistically probably doesn't look that way, but he was handling the defense. And then offensively, you couldn't move the ball at all. AJ Brown is important, but AJ Brown ain't that important. They still could have put up points, man. Still could have put up points. You made the move to get Swift, which isn't on Nick, but you made the move to get Swift, and they couldn't really figure out a way to incorporate him in the offense. Could get in the run game going most of the year, and you let Miles Sanders go. That might be on Howie. Miles Sanders was a big part of that team offensively. And, again, you took RPO out of the playbook, essentially. I think I saw one play in particular where they ran it last night, and I was like, why don't you just do more of it? Incorporate more of it. It sets up everything. If you go back and look at the 2022 season, that was the biggest reason why they got those explosive plays downfield. They would use the RPO. Didn't know if they were running or passing. They would hit you with some quick hits, like some slants and stuff, the big body AJ, and then dial up something to get you over top. And they would move the ball on the ground too effectively. Like, none of that happened. None of that happened. If I don't have AJ Brown and Jalen Hurts is struggling, and you know, the same way I talked about, you know, Dak Prescott needs to see a couple go in before he gets into a rhythm. Jalen Hurts, I don't think he's really that kind of guy. He's not that prolific of a passer, but you can manage the game by making it very easy for him by staying out of third and longs. People who are not good passers struggle in third and longs. Hell, people who are good passers struggle in third and longs. You should run a game plan or essentially attack a defense with the idea that if we get in a third down, we want it to be short. So if we don't get any yards on first down, we probably should pass on second down or come up with a play that's a heavy hitter so we can get in third and short. In a perfect world, for me as a play caller, I would like to have drives where I have nothing but third and shorts because it gives my defense a rest and it kills the opposing defense's will. When they can't stop you, when you can tush push your way to a first down every time, essentially, it's demoralizing. And the one thing that can instantly perk up a team is a three and out. And we've seen a lot of those last night, especially when you have terrible first and second down plays. Again, I don't understand it. I don't think it's rocket science, but these guys, we essentially, like I say this all the time, we give them too much credit sometimes. We give them too much credit, and I know people are probably like, well, you can't do it. I wish I could. I really wish I could get a playbook and I could get Andy Reid's menu and call plays. I would love to do that. I would love to take up that challenge. I would be the Black Dan Campbell. And there's one thing about Dan Campbell that I will always respect is if he's going to lose, he's going to lose calling the game his way. I ain't seen Dan Campbell switch it up yet. And that is why he has been successful this year, because he's true to himself. I've seen the Eagles switch it up. Look at where they are. I've seen the Cowboys switch it up in the playoffs and look at where they are. The teams who don't switch it up are the teams that are successful. The Texans ain't switched it up all year. Look at where they are. The Chiefs can't catch, but they ain't switched it up. Look at where they are. The Bills kind of switched it up a little bit with adding Cook more to the offense, but still, it runs through Josh Allen. They ain't switch it up. They didn't come into that Steelers game going, oh, crap. It's 2 feet of snow on the ground. It's sub-freezing temperatures. We need to get under center. And No. They're still doing their thing. Still doing their thing. And those teams are the teams that win. We've got 20-plus years of evidence that the Patriot way was essentially the same damn thing over and over again. They went from a explosive deep threat type offense, and then they compact it with more tight ends. And it still, though, their concepts stayed the same. I to this day remain convinced that a lot of the Patriots plays were the same damn play with different personnel from a different formation. I would love to know what their actual playbook was. It couldn't have been that complex. And there's nothing against Tom Brady and them, but you know what they did? They perfected executing. And that is why they were successful. And the teams who, for some reason, are glossing over that little nuance, the execution part, are the ones who have failed right now. And that is why if you're a Cowboys fan, if you're an Eagles fan, you're looking back going, what happened? There's your answer right there. All right, so I got to go because I ran a little long and I edited out a lot of stuff, but I have a show in like 10 minutes. Let me know what you guys think. I should be promoting and doing ads on Facebook here soon with my sponsor, Racky Insurance. So shout out to Racky's Insurance. My friend and his family are going to sponsor the podcast. So that's big news. Hopefully it can grow and we can do some cooler things. During the off season, I might try to do some film stuff. I'm still learning a lot of it, a lot of the nuances, a lot of the language, because the NFL, they basically speak Latin, but it's all the same once we break it down. So the more I learn, the more I'll teach you guys or share with you, and the more we can grow. Exciting news is I could potentially go to the NFL Combine. I did get my full-fledged media, NFL media credentials the other day. So that's cool. Might be a work-related issue, though, because it's also the same weekend as the A-10 championship. And, well, work is work. So I would have to pick work over that. But I will be at the Senior Bowl in 2 weeks, which is going to be interesting. I might actually not do podcasts that week. I could podcast from the room, but the quality might not be the same. But I will be at the Senior Bowl. So if you do listen to the podcast and you know the Senior Bowl roster, you can go online and check the Senior Bowl roster. I will be at all three practices. If there's a player that you want me to look at, scout, or you want some tape on throughout practice, we can record those things. Let me know, and I'll get that for you and send it to you. Last year, I loved Tajay Spears and Musgrove, who scored that touchdown in the Packers game. And Tajay Spears is the backup for Derrick Henry and the Titans, but he's probably the starter now. But those are my two favorite players, and they're doing perfectly well in the NFL in their rookie season. So I'm pretty excited about that and going to continue to try to do as much scouting and just, again, insider stuff that I can do for the podcast, for the listeners, for the IBN Sports Group, for anybody that just cares about football.